Today, Uncle Dan has another story about Joshua as he leads the children of Israel.
Thank you, Aunt Sue. Our Bible story is adapted from the Old Testament, the book of Joshua, chapters 11, 15, 17, 22, and 24. I call the story
Conquering Canaan.
The northern part of Canaan was occupied by many and strong peoples who became terrified at the success which had attended Israel in South Canaan. In the north, on the shores of Lake Merom, was the city of Hazor. Now Hazor was a very strongly fortified city reigned over by King Jabin. And King Jabin called together all the kings of northern Canaan and suggested a confederacy to protect their lands against the onslaught of the Israelite hosts.
But Joshua and his army seem to win battles regardless of the odds against them.
I doubt that we can do anything against him either.
No, gentlemen, let us be calm, keep our wits about us, and plan intelligently.
Calm? When our very lives are threatened?
Oh, no, I doubt if things are quite that bad.
Has anyone at all won a single battle from Joshua?
Well, no.
I think we should surrender to Joshua.
Gentlemen. Aren't you forgetting one important fact? We are a long way from Joshua's headquarters. We are almost inaccessible to him and to his army. Also, we are practically impregnable to an attack.
Impregnable? That's what Jericho thought, too, with their strong walls and fortified position. But Joshua conquered them anyway.
No. This is the wrong attitude, gentlemen, the wrong approach. If we don't think we can win, we can't.
How can we win against the strength of Joshua and his mighty men?
Well, we certainly can't by a defeatist attitude. We're doomed. Our countries are in real danger. We will be defeated unless we band together, fight together, stick together, and do the very best we can together to defeat Joshua. At least we'll have an outside chance to win.
You're right, of course, Jabin. And I'm sure that all of us agree that we must stick together against the common enemy. I herewith pledge my country and my fighting force to the common good.
So do I!
Right,
yes, now we're getting somewhere. In unity, there is strength. Hurrah for the Confederacy of Northern Canaan!
Hurrah for the Confederacy!
Now, our first order of business is to decide upon a Confederate leader and the place to establish headquarters.
Now, we are all kings, of Northern Canaan, and as kings are qualified to lead armies to battle. Yet I, for one, am in favor of King Jabin being the leader of our combined forces. He has displayed calmness, a strength of purpose, and unflinching courage in all this.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. I shall certainly do all in my power to turn the tide of battle against Joshua. But now let's get down to cases. With your permission, I should like to establish headquarters right here in Hazor. Certainly there's no better fortified city in all Canaan than Hazor. It is also my suggestion that we let Joshua bring the war to us. We will let him attack us. Then we will have a definite advantage. Are we all agreed on this? Now, unless my information is in error, our combined forces will far outnumber the forces of Joshua.
I think that is correct, Your Majesty.
And we will have well-armed and trained soldiers, while Joshua's army is made up mostly of citizens, untrained, poorly armed.
Your Majesty, I think that would have been completely true a few months ago, even weeks. But Joshua has conquered all the nations of southern Canaan, which means that they have probably confiscated many weapons of war, which they are now armed with.
Yes, that's true. However, our main advantage will be in our horses and our chariots, the greatest weapon of war ever invented. I understand Israel has no horses and chariots at all.
Well, they certainly have captured horses and chariots from the southern Canaan nations.
Yes. But do you know what they've done with those horses and chariots?
Put them to good use, probably.
No, they've burned the chariots and lamed the horses.
Whatever for, are they crazy?
They did it at the command of their God, supposedly so that they wouldn't put their trust in horses or chariots, but in the Lord their God.
The more I hear about those Israelites, the more sure I am that properly organized and led, our combined forces can whip them.
Down with the Israelites!
Yes, and now, gentlemen, let's get down to specific plans for the protection of our respective countries. To start with, Our headquarters here in Hazor must be...
Meanwhile, at Gilgal, the camp headquarters of Israel, Joshua was addressing his great army of mighty men and warriors.
Mighty men of Israel, in your hands rests the final conquering of Canaan. Although most of Canaan is now in our possession, there remains northern Canaan and some of the western nations to yet depossess. By far the most formidable enemy yet to cope with is the Confederacy of Northern Canaan under the leadership of Jabin, king of Hazor. They are now camped by Lake Merom beside the fortified city of Hazor. They form by far the largest army we have yet faced. Their soldiers are in number as the sands of the sea. But the Lord God of Israel said unto me, be not afraid because of them, for tomorrow about this time will I deliver them up, all slain before thee.
And Joshua and all the mighty men of Israel marched against King Jabin of Hazor and all the allied kings with him. And God delivered Hazor into the hand of Joshua. And one by one, the mighty cities of the kings of the north fell to Israel. Joshua became master of Canaan. Then the land rested from war. Even though the power of Canaan had been broken, there remained on the west coast the Philistines and the Sidonians, dangerous and continuous enemies of Israel. And scattered throughout all the land were bands of peoples who were still to be subdued. It was the duty of each tribe to fully subdue the people in its own inheritance. Moses, before his death upon Mount Nebo, had fixed the outer boundary of the land. Now it became Joshua's lot to divide the land among the 12 tribes of Israel. He was to be assisted in this duty by Eleazar, the high priest, and one prince from each tribe, formally appointed by Moses. Joshua himself, of the tribe of Ephraim, was one of these princes. Also Caleb, of the tribe of Judah. Two of the tribes, Gad and Reuben, with half the tribe of Manasseh, had received their inheritance before crossing the Jordan River. They had, however, furnished their portion of armed men for the conquest of Canaan. For years they had fought bravely by the side of their brethren. Now the time had come for them to get back unto the land of their inheritance, where they had left their families, loved ones, and possessions. As they had united with their brethren in the conflicts, so they had shared the spoils. Consequently, they returned home with much gold, riches, cattle, and with brass, iron, and much raiment.
It is with anxious heart that I witness your departure for the land beyond the Jordan. You will be far from the sanctuary. Strong will be the temptations in your isolated and wandering life to fall into the customs of the heathen tribes that dwell on your borders. I plead with you, be of strong courage and remain true to the precepts of God's immortal law.
Caleb of the tribe of Judah was one of the princes appointed by Moses to aid Joshua in making proper and fair distribution of the land of promise. Now, before the actual distribution began, Caleb came forward with a special claim.
Greetings, Caleb.
Salutations, Joshua.
Have a seat and visit a while.
I don't wish to bother you, Joshua. You're a busy man.
No more busy than you, I'm sure. And I think we're due a short reprieve from duty to reminisce, don't you? After all, Caleb, we are the two oldest men in Israel. You and I are the only ones yet alive who actually came out of Egypt.
I don't feel old.
How old are you, Caleb?
85, Joshua.
Well, you're still a young man compared to me.
You're only a few years older than 85.
Well, a few years can make a great deal of difference at our ages.
Perhaps so, but I wouldn't know yet. I am as well and strong as I was 45 years ago when Moses sent me, along with you and 10 others, to spy out the land of Canaan, remember?
As if it were yesterday. We were camped at Kadesh, only 11 days from Mount Horeb, but a short distance from the borders of Canaan. The people, as usual, did not trust God or Moses and insisted that spies be sent to survey the land. A ruler from each tribe was chosen. Oh, how well I remember that clear morning when Moses bade us go into Canaan and observe its people.
You 12 young men have been chosen by direction of God to go into Canaan as spies. Bring back a report of its people, whether they are strong or weak, few or many. Observe the land, its situation, its natural advantages, and the productivity of the soil. Bring back also some of the fruit of the land. Now go. Go and survey the entire land from the southern to its northern borders.
So this is Hebron.
Yes, Hebron. One of the most renowned spots of the world. For many years, it was the home of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The cave of Machpelah is here.
That's very true, Joshua, but it isn't a friendly spot any longer. It's now occupied by the Anakims, probably the fiercest people in all the world.
And did you ever see such large giants as these Anakims?
I didn't even know such large men existed. They make us look like mere pygmies.
And the cities of Anakin, such strong walls and fortified, positively impregnable they are.
I think it's impossible for us to conquer Canaan. The people are too strong.
The Lord is on our side. Nothing is impossible to God.
Anyway, it's not our duty to decide if we can or cannot occupy Canaan. Our job is to look it over and report what we find to Moses.
People of Israel, you have heard our report. Canaan is a good land. It is beautiful and productive. Nevertheless, there are many difficulties and dangers that we will face if we undertake to conquer the land.
And what my companion says is true. Canaan is populated by giants so large that, by comparison, we are mere pygmies.
The nations of Canaan are powerful. The cities are walled and impregnable. It is useless to even think of possessing the land.
We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we and will conquer us.
We would be better off to remain here or go back to Egypt.
Listen to me, my people. I am Caleb. I am one of the 12 you sent to spy out Canaan. What these two have just said about Canaan is true. Yet it is also true that our God is stronger than a million Canaans. He is well able to deliver the people into our hands. Together with Joshua, I beg of you, let us trust in the Lord our God and go up and possess Canaan.
Caleb and Joshua do not tell you the truth. They are unfaithful to God and to you and your families. It would be better for us to die in the wilderness than to die fighting the strong nations of Canaan.
Away with Caleb! Stone them!
Yes, Caleb, I well remember all that, even though it was over 40 years ago. You and I were the only two men of the 12 who have lived to inherit Canaan.
We were the only two with faith enough to believe Canaan could be conquered. And one important truth of life is, according to your faith, be it unto you.
It was only by a miracle of God that we were saved from being stoned by the angry people. How many times since then, Caleb, my friend, have I thanked God that we, you and I, were faithful and strong enough to stand up to our belief that Israel could inherit Canaan.
There's one thing, Joshua, that I should like to remind you of. Remember what God, through Moses, promised me right after the people were hushed by the manifestation of God's glory?
I think so. If I remember correctly, the exact words were these. My servant Caleb, because he had another spirit within him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereinto he went.
Yes, but there was one more promise, a more specific one. The very land of the giants that brought about the fear of Israel to possess Canaan was promised me as an inheritance.
You wish Hebron as a permanent inheritance?
Yes, sir, please.
But Hebron hasn't been conquered. The giant Anakamentes still possess the land.
If the Lord will be with me, then shall I be able to drive them out.
Oh, but you're old, Caleb. Wouldn't you prefer to possess a land already conquered?
Our people must have an example of true bravery and faith. The tribes must be encouraged to fully subdue the land which their fathers had deemed unconquerable.
Oh, bless you, Caleb. To none other can the conquest of this giant stronghold be more safely entrusted. Your request is granted. The land of Hebron shall be an inheritance to you and to your seed forever and ever.
Having obtained the inheritance and trusting in God, Caleb and his house drove the three sons of Anak out of the cities and mountains and possessed the land. His zeal did not abate. He did not settle down to enjoy his inheritance, but pushed on to further conquests for the benefit of the nation and the glory of God. Caleb had not asked for a land already conquered. He did not desire honor or aggrandizement for himself. Rather, the brave old warrior was desirous of giving the people an example that would honor God and encourage the tribes to fully subdue the land which their fathers had deemed unconquerable. Joshua received another request. However, a request entirely different from Caleb's. A request born of greed, selfishness, vanity, and pride.
May I speak to you, Joshua, about a very important matter?
Of course.
I represent the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. We are children of Joseph. We are a mighty and superior tribe.
Yes.
Because of our superior numbers and greatness, we demand that we be allotted a double portion of land.
You have already been given the richest land in Canaan.
True, Joshua, but we want more land. Anyway, many of the cities of the valley are still in possession of the Canaanites.
And your tribe shrink from the toil and danger of conquering those cities. Is that it?
Well, of course not. We need more land, and we think it's only fair that we be given additional territory that has already been subdued.
If Mount Ephraim and the valleys be too small, and if you be a great and powerful tribe, I suggest that you go to the wood country of the Perizzites, the giants, and hew out additional land for yourselves.
You refuse to grant us additional inheritance?
I refuse to depart from strict justice and right.
But Joshua, the Canaanites that dwell in the valley are mighty, and they have chariots of iron.
The real cause of your complaint is that you lack the faith and courage to drive out the Canaanites.
We demand a hearing and judgment of our claims.
You argue that you are a strong and great people, numerous and powerful. By your own argument shall you be judged. Being a great tribe, as you yourself claim, you are well able to make your own way, as do your brother tribes. With the help of God and proper faith, you have no cause to fear the Canaanites nor their chariots of iron.
My dear people of Israel, ever since we crossed the Jordan River, we have been camped here in Gilgal. From this place, we have subdued most of the peoples of Canaan. We have divided the land of Canaan among the 12 tribes, and now we must move on to a new location. In almost the exact center of Canaan lies the town of Shiloh. The territory around Shiloh has been thoroughly subdued and the enemy routed. We shall move our camp to Shiloh!
And the whole congregation of Israel assembled together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of the congregation there. Soon after the tabernacle was set up in Shiloh, there came a disturbing bit of news about the two tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan.
You wish to see me, Phineas?
Yes, sir, on a very important matter, sir.
Well, I certainly shall listen to one who is as zealous in the welfare of our people as you, Phineas. I well remember how you handled the affair with Zimri. And then later, how you led 10,000 of our men of valor in victory against the 5 kings of Midian. You wish to see me, I presume, relative to your duties as priest in the sanctuary.
No, sir. It has to do with the tribes settled on the other side of the Jordan.
Yes?
They have erected an altar of burnt offering beside the Jordan River.
An altar of burnt offering?
Yes, sir.
But the law of God prohibits on pain of death the establishment of any place of worship except the one here at the sanctuary.
I know, sir.
Oh, I have been worried about them. They're so far away from the influence of the sanctuary service, and so close to the temptations of heathen peoples, that I feared for their apostasy.
What are you going to do about it, Joshua, sir?
We must not let it remain unpunished, Phineas. It will lead the people away from the true faith. And perhaps we should have a general assembly of the people and discover what their wishes are in the matter.
Now, you have heard the accusation against our brother tribes on the other side of the Jordan. What is your wish in the matter?
There is only one course open to us, sir. Make war against them and forever stamp out them and their apostasy.
Oh, people of Israel, how do we know that the report we received is true?
It is true, Phineas. Our brothers have erected altars by the Jordan. That is in direct disobedience to the commands of God, and according to the law, must be punished by death.
I readily admit that such an act is worthy of death. However, before punishment is pronounced upon them, it is only right and proper to let them defend themselves. We should give them an opportunity to explain their conduct.
They should be put to death, every one of them.
Just a minute. Just a minute, my dear people. Phineas is right. His counsel is sound. In fairness to our brothers, we should send a delegation to discover the full truth of the matter. If guilty, they will be properly punished. If we punish them without a fair trial, we will be guilty of mass murder. With your approval, I shall appoint one prince from each of the tribes to go to Gad and Reuben on the other side of the Jordan to discover the truth.
Are the representatives from Gad and Reuben present?
They are all here. You may proceed.
As you know, we are 10 princes sent here by Joshua and the congregation of the 10 tribes. Word reached us that you have erected an altar of burnt offering in direct disobedience to God's specific command.
But, Phineas, sir, the altar we erected at the Jordan...
Then you admit to erecting the altar.
Yes, of course,
but... No, you not that such an act is rebelling against God.
But, Phineas, sir, we...
Excuses will not erase the sin against you. How could you have done so? Such open rebellion and apostasy. How could you have forgotten so soon the judgments visited upon Israel because of their apostasy at Peor?
But
I... Perchance, this side is too far removed from the tabernacle and its services, and you are unwilling to remain here without an altar of sacrifice. So Joshua and all Israel... offer you a share in the possessions and privileges on the other side of the Jordan. Well?
Have you finished speaking, Phineas?
There is nothing more I can say.
And may I now speak for my people?
We are here for that specific purpose.
We did erect an altar beside the River Jordan, but not an altar of sacrifice. It simply stands as a witness that we, on this side of the Jordan, are also worshippers of the living God.
Oh, no, well, not for one.
We were fearful lest our children and our children's children might forget God. And because of their separation by distance from the tabernacle of God, they might be excluded from the services and blessings of the sanctuary. That is why, my brethren, we erected an altar of remembrance.
With great joy, the ambassadors accepted this explanation and immediately carried back the tidings to Joshua and Israel. And all the people were united in rejoicing and praise to God.
In thee, O Lord, do I put my trust, for thou art my hope, thou art my trust from my youth. Thy righteousness, O Lord, is very high. My soul shall sing unto thee, for there is none like unto thee.
Joshua, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua.